Today on Against the Grain, public schools in cities across the U.S., cities like Newark, New Jersey, have been the targets of privatization campaigns over the last two decades. Sociologist John Arena asks why rising star and mayor Cory Booker was unsuccessful at forcing through corporate school reform in Newark, while his rival and successor, Mayor Ross Baraka, a one-time leader of the grassroots movement for local control of schools, brought charters in. From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California, this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. I'm Sasha Lilly. Over two decades, corporate elites, students, teachers, and residents of the economically struggling city of Newark, New Jersey, squared off over efforts to transform the city's public schools and bring in charters. Ultimately, the forces opposing privatization lost. And the mayor who pushed through corporate school reform was paradoxically drawn from the leadership of the protest movement. John Arena teaches sociology at CUNY's College of Staten Island. In his latest book, Expelling Public Schools, How Anti-Racist Politics Enable School Privatization in Newark, published by the University of Minnesota Press, he traces successive school reform battles in that city. John, I wonder if you could start with a rough history of Newark. How have the city's fortunes risen and fallen?
In many ways, Newark is associated with the urban crisis, with urban decline. And I see, you know, the transformation of Newark and other major industrial cities, particularly in the Northeast and Midwest, is kind of a movement from above by capital in response to the labor struggles of the 30s and 40s to weaken them by deindustrialization, moving industry out of the cities, and suburbanization. And Newark was hit particularly hard by those developments. I mean, the early 20th century is one of the largest cities in the United States. But in the 30s, there's a decline during the Depression. Then it picks up again in the early 40s, and then beginning in the 50s through 2000, there's a massive decline for almost 500,000 to under 300,000, and now it's gone back up. And there was a racial transformation. And so this was a really racialized process of suburbanization with racial covenants that basically blocked African-Americans from moving to the green pastures that were opening up in surrounding areas of Newark, unlike Chris Christie, whose family, current Republican presidential candidate. I don't know how well he's going to do fair this time around, but he was born in Newark in the early 60s. I think he's a year older than me. And then his family moved out to Livingston, New Jersey, in the mid 60s, right before the Newark Rebellion. The white population dropped dramatically. Newark became majority Black and Puerto Rican by the late 60s. The schools were majority students of color by the early 1960s, a lot of people attribute the decline of Newark to the what's in some quarters called a riot, the 1967 riot, others call a rebellion, but the forces that contributed to that rebellion were long time in coming. The political changes, the first African-American mayor was Kenneth Gibson, elected in 1970. And that was part of the rise of a number of Black mayors around the country because of these same demographic changes that we saw in Newark, driven by suburbanization and deindustrialization. And Adolf Reed refers to these as black urban regimes, where you have a majority black city council, black mayor, and then often operating in alliance with white corporate elites to put through a pro-corporate agenda. But there were different expectations, obviously, when these regimes first arose, and Newark in particular, with Gibson's rise, Amiri Baraka, the black activist, poet, author, playing a major role in his rise. But there was, you know, different plans, different conceptions of where the city would go between these two actors, and they eventually have a falling out by the end of Gibson's first term in 1974. And then I guess we'll get into more of the more recent developments, but following Gibson, he was there for several terms. I think it was four terms, and then Sharp James, who also was kind of part of that same generation, were part of the Great Migration from the South, were incorporated into Newark and urban politics through the Great Society programs of the 1960s, and pursued a generally pro-corporate development model, trying to revive downtown subsidies to business that his predecessor had. But then we have a major change with the rise, the star mayor, Cory Booker, who arrived in Newark, is a generation or more younger than his predecessors, and came from very elite educational background. He grew up in the suburbs of New Jersey. His parents were executives at IBM or Xerox, one of the big Fortune 500 companies, and were real beneficiaries of the gains of the civil rights movement. They were able to acquire a home, despite a lot of discriminatory practices against them, a home in an affluent suburb, New Jersey, and again, they worked in corporate America. But he did always have some relationships with Newark growing up, and then he went to some very elite universities out there in California, Stanford, and then he went on with to Oxford and got his law degree at Yale, and then came to Newark. And his kind of major initiative was around privatization of public education, which of course he and the movement he was allied to portrayed this in very progressive terms as the new civil rights movement of our day.
And we'll talk a whole lot more about his agenda to do with Newark schools, but just staying for a moment with the forces that came together from above in the first decade of the 21st century to transform Newark. I wonder if you could talk about how that fit in with a larger change that you can see in cities across the United States of elites, and especially white elites, having had fled city centers after the turmoil of the civil rights movement and racist white flight, and city centers really were abandoned. And then there was a turn for a lot of big capital to go back into cities in the earlier years of the century.
I want to give a plug to Howard Ryan's work, Educational Justice, Teaching and Organizing Against the Corporate Juggernaut. I think he does a pretty good job of kind of charting the privatization around education, which I conceive as well as he does as part of this larger kind of neoliberal transformation, neoliberal stage of capitalist development that kind of begins in the 1970s and really takes hold in the 80s. But the cutting edge around the attack on public education was spearheaded by the Business Roundtable, beginning in the 1980s, and in particular around instituting the testing regime. And then we see beginning, as you mentioned, the early 21st century, kind of new forces around, he calls edu business, and the philanthropic forces, which I use in the book called philanthrocapitalists. And then we see a real move toward the charterization, toward the privatization. In the earlier movement, it kind of laid the groundwork, because with these testing regimes, it sets up schools for failing schools that then can be turned over to charter schools, which are publicly funded but privately run public schools. And at the same time, yes, as you mentioned, we see a return of capital to cities, particularly many majority black cities. And the charters have been a real key component of opening up urban real estate to make it more attractive. And one way is that's an option, an educational option, a new amenity for the gentrifiers that are coming in. Often, you know, more affluent and white, but not in all cases. And so that's one hook, one interest among the gentrifiers and the urban real estate interest behind it and banking interest, is that it gives another option for these gentrifiers. But also, particularly as we see in Newark, the location of these charter schools have been a central component of quote unquote reviving the downtown real estate. And so one of the prime examples in the Newark case is Teachers Village, which was, there was all kinds of city, state, and federal subsidies to develop this collection of, new development that charter schools were housed in, but also they had street level commerce and apartments for, geared toward, they said teachers, but they wanted to bring in what Richard Florida called the creative class to help kind of jumpstart gentrification in the city. And so there's a real close connection between particularly in the Newark case, but in others as well, between charters and gentrification.
Right. So you have these different forces at work nationally and then locally. The idea for those with real estate capital to make neighborhoods more enticing to more affluent residents by replacing the schools with charter schools and trying to draw in wealthier people to come and live in those areas.
And if I could just add, there's a great book too on Hoboken, New Jersey, which Newark is trying to catch up with, and that has developed charter schools where it's almost all white, and the affluent have kind of taken over the charter schools, where local low income Black and Puerto Rican Latino children are generally at the public school.
So all of these forces are, in beginning of the 21st century, arrayed in cities around the country, in Newark. Tell us about the grand vision that was announced for Newark schools in 2010, who the players were, and what they had in mind for the students of Newark.
So, as I mentioned, Cory Booker comes to the city in the late 90s. In the early 2000s, he kind of has his coming out with an address to the Manhattan Institute, kind of this right-wing think tank, where he begins really promoting charter schools as the vision for cities like Newark and around the country. And then he later becomes he runs first in 2002 against Sharp James, kind of the old line Black political leadership, who are also with the neoliberal agenda. Sharp James oversaw massive demolition of public housing, which is also part of the gentrification agenda. But he wasn't willing to go the next step around the attack on public education, which kind of followed the assault on public housing that we've seen around the country, places like San Francisco, Newark. And so a lot the forces behind that were looking to players like Cory Booker to kind of lead that effort. And so 2006, he's elected. And this is right at the time after Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, where the Democratic governor and the Bush administration and the Democratic mayor, Ray Nagin, oversee the mass closure of public schools, the firing of the public school teachers, the busting of their union, and the mass privatization of the school district. And at that time, five powerful, large philanthropies came together to pool their resources and target particular cities to really push forward privatization, which they talked about, you know, educational options and the new civil rights movement of our day. And the three cities chosen in 2006 for this effort were New Orleans, Washington, D.C., and Newark, and all majority black cities. And Booker's administration and many of his top education officials came over from the Michael Bloomberg administration, which were you know, the Bloomberg administration massively pushed forward charters in New York City during his reign. And so they came over and they partnered with these philanthropies. They created the Newark Charter School Fund to help funnel money into these new efforts. And so there was that effort early on in Booker's administration. But there was a Democratic governor who did a lot of things to also support privatization, but wasn't ready to turn over the schools to Cory Booker, as we've seen in some other cities, to push forward his privatization agenda. But things changed in 2009. When the previously mentioned Chris Christie, born in Newark but grew up in the suburbs of Newark and Livingston, was elected governor, Republican. And he partnered, and this is recounted in another book who I critique in my book, Dale Russakoff's book, The Prize, on the privatization of schools in Newark. And they created basically a partnership to put through a shock therapy privatization plan for the public schools in Newark. So it had been in process. And let me go back a little bit. The Newark schools were taken over by the state of New Jersey in the mid-1990s, which was part of a national trend. And at the same time, about the following year in 96, the state created created legislation for creating charter schools, which were controlled by the state. But they grew kind of slowly in those first years. But beginning with Booker's ascension in 2006, and then with this pact with Chris Christie to fast forward the privatization, that's when they begin to really take off. And so they had this earlier philanthropic money, but then in 2010, which was unveiled dramatically on the Oprah Winfrey Show, appropriately, because Oprah's another billionaire and a big supporter of charter schools. They announced this plan of $100 million matching grant from Zuckerberg's foundation, which was called very appropriately around Silicon Valley philanthrocapitalist terms, a startup, Newark, something like that. Which was later renamed a little bit more local sounding name. But he announced this $100 million award to transform Newark public schools. And this was all lauded as a progressive effort, anti-racist effort. It was bipartisan, right? We had the big city Democratic Mayor Cory Booker with the Republican Governor Chris Christie to push this through, and they did move on that vision. One of the first acts was to hire a new CEO superintendent to kind of push through these reforms. They eventually decided upon Cammie Anderson, who also was formerly in the Booker, in the Bloomberg administration, worked under Joel Klein, who was Bloomberg's neoliberal school chancellor, and pushed through the privatization plans there. She would have actually been a longtime supporter of Booker. She was had been part of his first mayoral campaign. But she came over and was named as the superintendent. And there was changes at the state, changes in legislation at the state level to facilitate reforms, firing teachers, making it easier to close public schools. And this was also in collaboration at the same time we have the Obama administration, which was very pro-charter. The Secretary of Education came out of Chicago, who was friends of Obama's basketball pal, pushed through many pro-charter, pro-privatization, charterization measures, and was really staffed with a lot of Teach for America veterans, another kind of key part of this movement from above to privatize public education. And so in this first few years, so we're talking 2011, Anderson comes on and she puts through a number of these reforms. Again, they sign a new union contract. And so the union officials, the American Federation of Teachers Local, the Newark Teachers Association, also kind of collaborates with Christie, with Booker, with Cammie Anderson to modify their collective bargaining agreement to facilitate the charterization, the privatization, the flexibility that this movement was looking for.
John Arena is my guest. He's associate professor of sociology at CUNY's College of Staten Island. We're discussing his book, Expelling Public Schools. I'm Sasha Lilly, and this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. So you've just been discussing the coalescing of what you kind of describe as a movement from above by elites, a bipartisan one, to push through the charterization of schools in the city of Newark, New Jersey. But in your book, you also write about movements from below. And I wanted to ask you, how was this vision for charter schools greeted by the students and teachers, you know, putting the union leadership aside, and parents of Newark?
Well, so again, the chronology we have is, you know, Booker comes in 2006, you know, he is elected, and he begins those reforms, and then the pact with Christie, 2009-2010, Anderson comes in 2011. And early on, she receives a lot of resistance from the public over these reforms. And there's especially resistance because she's coming from the outside. The previous superintendent had been kind of brought up through the system. And so there was a lot of wariness to her agenda. And so at many of the public school meetings where she unveiled, kind of rolled out some of her plans, closing schools, there was a lot of opposition. It was very, very vocal. But the real fight back began. One was the among the teachers. There was a rank and file group formed while they were negotiating this new contract that put in a lot of the reforms that Christie and Anderson and Booker wanted. And it was called the Newark Education Workers, and they mounted a vote no campaign on the contract. So that was kind of one form so you had some opposition at the school board meetings. You had this rank and file dissident group within the union that's emerging. But the big force, at least in the Newark case, were the students. And so in 2012, the students, with support from some of the dissident teachers, began organizing. And they were responding to this contradiction. And you mentioned earlier, you know, there was a lot of this hoopla over the Zuckerberg money, all this attention on Newark Public Schools, this new renaissance. And yet students were seeing conditions deteriorate for them. And because at the same time Christie is announcing this new deal for Newark, he's slashing the state education budget and giving tax breaks to his wealthy benefactors. And Newark and a number of other poor districts had won over the years requirement that the state compensate poor urban districts compared to the budgets that their suburban counterparts were receiving, which was a product, right, of the deindustrialization and the suburbanization of the city that had been carried out over the previous decades. And so we see a big cut to the Newark school budget. And so students are responding to that, and they begin organizing in the fall of 2012. And then in 2013, they organize. They're centered in this one particular high school, but they organize around the city, and they organize a major walkout while the state is holding a hearing, a legislative hearing, on public education in Newark. And that really puts the students on the radar screen, on the political radar screen. And so thousands of students march out, and they're demanding more money for the schools. They're speaking out against privatization. They're criticizing the Booker administration. And this is part of kind of growing ferment against Booker as well. And so by this time, 2012, 2013, he exits from Newark. Now, he always was looking for higher office, but particularly the presidency, as we clearly saw in the last presidential election. But a better jumping off point would have been the governor's office. But because of the protests and the against his his leading reform initiative around schools, because of the opposition to that, he decides to exit early to the U.S. Senate. And in the midst of this, a mayoral campaign emerges, because this was near the end of his second term, and this is where kind of Roz Baraka begins to emerge, and he allies with this this movement to defend public schools in New Orleans and against the reformers from above, the elite reformers, in particular Cami Anderson, who becomes a lightning rod for, especially with Booker's exit, kind of the face of this a movement from above to privatize public education.
So you mentioned a little earlier in the program the figure of Amiri Baraka, the African-American poet and activist who played an important role himself in Newark. Tell us about his son, Roz Baraka, and what position he ended up staking out in this fight that had exploded in Newark around reforming the schools.
I mean, you asked me about the movement, and he's kind of in the movement and he's outside the movement. And so, yeah, he plays this really contradictory role. So yes, he is Roz Baraka is the son of the famed, activist, poet, artist, Amiri Baraka. He kind of was brought up in the movement. He was born 1970, this about the same year as, about the same age as his predecessor, Cory Booker. But unlike Cory Booker, he grows up in Newark in the movement. He goes to Howard University, which his father attended as well. And he's an activist there. He leads a sit-in against one of the board of trustees. Lee Atwater had cooked up the racist Willie Horton ad during the Bush Dukakis race in 92. And so he was an activist. He comes back after he graduates from Howard. he comes back to Newark, is a school teacher in the Newark Public School District, and he's an activist. He's an activist in the streets, leads police brutality protests, anti-police brutality protests. He's very critical of Sharp James. He actually does cooperate with Booker in some protests during this period. But he eventually then does kind of is brought in by the James administration. I think he's made a vice mayor, and he carries out a number of races to get back on the city council, and eventually in 2010, kind of as this movement from below is emerging against the privatization of public schools, he's elected to a city council seat, and he becomes the major opponent of Cory Booker on the city council. And this is also during the midst of the Great Recession. He leads some protest against the effects of the downturn in Newark. But with Booker's exit to the U.S. Senate, he then throws his hat into the ring in the mayor's race. And it really becomes kind of a referendum on the charter schools and Booker's agenda. His opponent is Shavar Jeffries, who was the all but anointed successor of Cory Booker. Booker did not back him, but he was, you know, clearly in his corner, and he was carrying the charter school banner. He worked closely. He had been on the board of directors of the local KIPP franchise, one of the leading privatized charter chains in the country. He was on the school board, where he also kind of defended Cami Anderson and her reforms, and he was heavily backed by the wealthy interests behind the charter movement, the charter movement. In contrast, Baraka was allied. He allied himself with the movement, with the student movement, defending public schools, and his campaign was basically funded by the labor unions. So he was, you know, outspent dramatically in the 2014 race. And he wins pretty convincingly. I think he had about 55% of the vote. But this was, again, in the midst of continuing student walkouts that had began a couple years before, but they intensified. So these massive student walkouts, there's protests, regularly disruptions at the school board meetings, and eventually Cami Anderson backs out. She refuses to even attend the school board meetings because they become so confrontational when she's there. And then we had on the school board school board elections, which brought pro Baraka anti Anderson majority on the school board. And again, we had a strengthening of the rank and file movement within the Newark Teachers Union. A number of they didn't win the presidency, but they, in one of the elections, they were able to attain a majority on among the delegates of the union. And so that's the context in which Baraka becomes mayor in 2014. He rises with this movement. He clearly comes to power on the power of this social movement. At the same time, and this gets back to our discussion earlier in the show, that charter schools are intimately connected, are directly connected to the rent intensification development agenda, kind of the hegemonic definition of progress and development. And Baraka was very much committed to that agenda. And so while he's meeting, you know, getting the endorsement of the Newark Student Union, coming out to the street protest, he's also meeting with business interests to kind of reassure them that he's someone that they can work with. And there's in 2013, early on the campaign, which I talk about in the book, he meets in closed doors with the major corporate officials, who don't necessarily live in Newark, but who have business interests in Newark. And he reassures them that, you know, I have this image, you know, the Baraka name. There's a lot that goes along with that. But I don't have horns. I'm not going to close down all the charter schools, right? And so he kind of had to do that balancing. And he's meeting with, some of the individually with some of the big real estate developers like Ron Bate. He was the developer that oversaw Teachers Village, the construction of Teachers Village, with major big investors behind him around that. And so that's kind of the dance, the needle that he had to thread. On one side, maintaining legitimacy among his mass base, among this movement, at the same time, really delivering for the business interest in the city. And those contradictions become sharper once he takes power. And so one of the first things that he does is hold a conference. He calls it a convention, which is clearly taken from Amiri Baraka's National Black Political Convention that he was central to in the late 60s and early 70s, the height being the 1972 Gary Convention, which was the whole idea of uniting the black community behind a common agenda, which was eventually splintered because of the class differences. But Baraka, the son, Roz Baraka, kind of takes a page from his father. He's very influenced by his father. He identifies with his father. Right? That's part of his legitimacy. And he creates this education convention, which brings the two sides, the warring parties together, right? The pro-charter forces and their organizations and actors, and the movement activists working to defend public education, except Cammie Anderson, the superintendent, who did not attend. And so he tries to conciliate this movement. At the same time, he puts a major focus on removing the inauthentic, illegitimate school superintendent, Cammie Anderson, and also returning Newark Public Schools to local control. So as I had mentioned earlier, in the mid-90s, the state, like in many cities in Newark and many cities in New Jersey and around the country, the state had taken over the local public schools, names a superintendent, abolished the, at least initially abolished the school board. And so increasingly after Baraka is elected, and then after the removal of Cammie Anderson in May, June of 2015, a year into Baraka's administration, into his first term, she is kicked out. And Baraka makes a deal with Christie, who at this time is about to launch his first presidential campaign, that in exchange for removing Cammie Anderson, they name a new superintendent, who is also very, very pro-charter, in fact, even more connected, Chris Cerf. But also, Christie agrees to a roadmap to a return to local control.
I'm speaking with John Arena. He is the author of Expelling Public Schools. That's published by the University of Minnesota Press. He's associate professor of sociology at CUNY's College of Staten Island. And I'm Sasha Lilly, and this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. John, you've been describing the trajectory that led to Roz Baraka, son of Amiri Baraka, becoming the mayor of Newark in the middle of a great deal of protest and anger around school reform, this attempt to drive through the charter schoolization of schooling in that city, and also the contradictions that seem to be embodied in Baraka. On the one hand, coming out of the social movement from below, and being seen as the mayor on behalf of these people who've organized around corporate school reform. And at the same time, you've been describing his links and connections with that corporate agenda of the business elite in Newark and an agenda that would further charters. Now, listeners might wonder at this point, well, how should we understand those contradictions? Is it the limits that anybody who finds themselves elected to positions of power in American cities under the constraints that any city is going to have of business elites having enormous power. Is that what led to his contradictory politics, or would you say that something else was going on?
I can't get into his head, right? There's always options. There's always alternatives. The reality is he decided that to manage the city, he had to placate the local business and the corporate business interests. Were there alternatives? Of course there are. Yeah. But he's also part of the Democratic Party, and there are real constraints if you're operating within that context. And so he decided to go in contrast. Now, he advertised his campaign, his rule, as when I become mayor, we all become mayor, right? So he kind of gave lip service to kind of popular democracy. But once in power, he made the decisions. And those were ones that were what the corporate elite saw as necessary, right? And so, once he makes this deal with Christie to get the roadmap to a return to local control, the issue of privatization kind of drops by the side. And that's the real, contradiction, because how can you even have real local control when an increasingly large percentage, over a third now, of your schools are controlled by these private entities, right? That allow no real public input on how they operate. And so there was kind of disgruntlement from his mass base around this. And so although the state kind of had control over opening of local schools, he still had a lot of influence as well. One was zoning changes. And so one major point of conflict that developed was the approval for the North Star chain, a new school. It was going to bring thousands of seats. And the local zoning board, which Baraka had really controlled, had to approve that. And so, he gave the green light to that. And there were a number of other measures aligning with the pro-charter forces in the election of school board representatives. And so there was this real kind of, that many saw kind of a betrayal of the campaign platform, the movement that he had allied with to come to power.
So one of the things that you're arguing in expelling public schools is that you have a series of mayors of Newark, first Cory Booker and then Roz Baraka, both of who push a agenda of school privatization. And yet it's actually the latter who himself comes out of social movements opposing corporate school reform, who in many ways is the most successful at doing this. Why do you think that is? And why didn't he engender a backlash when it was clear what he was doing from those who opposed corporate school reform?
Baraka had real legitimacy with the movement that Booker did not. I mean, he did ride, he came on the backs of this movement. He allied with this movement. And he did really help push forward a number of the protest. But again, because of his commitment to the rent intensification development agenda, he also had to satisfy the business interest. And he was able to kind of thread that needle because he did have much more legitimacy with that movement among the students, with the unions, with community activists. And so, again, after that, the Christie Pact, which he kind of threw overboard his populist rhetoric about when I become mayor, we all become mayor. He kind of makes this deal to get rid of Anderson, but then put in another character who's just as much committed to the charterization agenda. And then there's no agreement, there's no commitment from Christie to stop the continued expansion of charter schools. You know, and he had a lot of leverage at that point, because Christie could not have gone on the national stage when there's all this ferment and protest in Newark. He wanted the largest city in New Jersey. He had to quiet, as Bob Braun, a commenter on the movement, wrote. He had to quiet Newark, and Baraka kind of helped with that without getting in any kind of concession on the continued expansion of charters. And there was disgruntlement among different sectors of the movement. But because of his credibility, he was able to eventually, you know, quiet them and kind of bring peace to Newark, making Newark governable again. He was able to stop the protest, which, you know, someone like Booker could not, because Baraka had that real legitimacy and these organic connections with many community activists in Newark.
Well, let me end by asking you about lessons from movements from below, from the experience of the battle against corporate school reform in Newark, New Jersey. One of the things that you flag in the ability of Raz Baraka to push through an agenda that benefited elites while at the same time bringing people along with him from the popular social movement from below that he had been part of, was around this notion. I think we could sort of broadly boil it down to community. And one sees that within populist movements of all sorts of different stripes. But this idea that, in the case of Newark, there was a unified Black and Brown community with a sort of singular interests and ideas. What do you think is wrong with that kind of notion of a unified community?
I think that's, you know, kind of racist. We wouldn't talk about, you know, a white community, an undifferentiated white community. There are differences, right? But why don't we have that same lens when we look at the Black community? Right, Cedric Johnson talks about this framework of Black organicism. Right, we just see this unified, undifferentiated group, when in fact there are real class differences and class interests. And if we're going to understand struggles, urban struggles, particularly around education, we have to have that class. Class analysis at the local level or at the national level. And in the Newark case, you know, we could see how this kind of anti-racist politics, this anti-racist agenda, which sounded very progressive, was also kind of cloaked this privatization agenda. And so Baraka, as I mentioned, had this real difficulty. He, you know, had to placate his mass movement, but then not create any obstacles to privatization. And so that was done by re-engineering the movement as an anti-racist one, regaining local control for this Black and Brown community, while separating that from the privatization agenda. And yeah, I think more nationally, we can see how what comes across as an anti-racism agenda is really about a class one. And we could see that particularly, as I discuss in the book, around the Bernie Sanders campaign.
Considering the experience of Newark, do you feel like there are lessons that can be drawn for other places that are battling forces of privatization and gentrification within American cities?
Yeah, I mean, I think one is you got to have democratic organization, and where democratically arrived at demands, and that they, you know, fight for those demands. I think that was part of the problem in the Newark case, that there wasn't those clear demands, and I think particularly, but around education, there are real possibilities for building, you know, a really broad transformative movement, because the teachers are have this organic connection with their students, that interdependent relationship. And so they can raise demands around, the workplace, but also because they impact around their working conditions, housing and transportation and police brutality. And so I think that's the real power of a lot of these movements around education, that they can raise broader issues that bring in the broader working class, that has the potential of creating the power that you really need to win.
John Arena, thank you so much.
Thank you.
John Arena is the author of Expelling Public Schools, How Anti-Racist Politics Enable School Privatization in Newark. He's also the author of Driven from New Orleans. He's Associate Professor of Sociology at CUNY's College of Staten Island. I'm Sasha Lilly. You've been listening to Against the Grain. Thanks for listening, and please tune in again next time. Against the Grain is produced by Sasha Lilly and C.S. Song. Please visit us online at againstthegrain.org, where you'll find on-demand and downloadable audio and a way to sign up for our podcast. And you can check us out on Facebook at Against the Grain Radio, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Against.